The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan. My guest today, well, first, let me give her a little heads up that when I bring her on, I'm going to ask her about the conference, because she was at the conference 2 weeks ago, the Empathic Therapy Conference. Now, you know how sometimes you meet a person and you think to yourself, this is a good human being. This is a decent human being. This is an honest person. This is someone that I can trust. This is someone who hasn't got hidden agendas. This is an intelligent, caring, empathic person who shares values with me and who wants to do the best she can, as so many of us are trying to do on behalf of America's children. Well, years ago, I met Dorothy Cassidy, and that was my immediate impression, and it was my wife Ginger's immediate impression, that this person was as honest, straightforward, direct, and real as she seemed. And I asked Dorothy to join the board of directors of my old organization. And when I set up the new one, I asked Dorothy to join the advisory council. Dorothy Cassidy has an MED, a master's in education. For most of her life, she has taught special education for children and also for adults, and I think in adult learning programs. She has devoted a huge amount of her personal time, without compensation, to talking to anyone who would listen about what's real in mental health, what's good in mental health. And she and I think, hold very similar views as to what that is. Dorothy is just a plain, worthwhile, honest human being, and it's just a pleasure to welcome you onto my show. Dorothy, are you there?
I think so.
Well, I have the warmest feelings toward you, and it was a pleasure to see you at the conference. Give me your perspective on the conference. I had Doug Smith on last week to give his fresh out of the conference impression. What's yours?
Oh, wow. I just love it. I can't wait to come back again and again and again. I hope y'all are not completely worn out. This conference certainly is a coming together of lots of talents and understandings and perceptions that each person that was there has. And obviously, there are a number of choices for emotional well-being or wherever, however you want to call it. I kind of have a problem with the word mental health, probably because of the way it's what it's connected to. But basically, everyone's was for, against anything that's toxic, especially toxic chemicals. And Nadine DeSanto and I presented on emotional freedom techniques, and there were some others that I attended, and they were just talented people. I loved every single one of them, and I gained some perspectives that I went back to my school and shared with some of my colleagues and as much as I can with my students. Now I understand a little bit better about what these drugs, the mechanism, so that I can explain to other people what they might be seeing when they see a person act a certain way or something happens. Like Dr. Fred Bauman, you know, of course he explained from a neurological standpoint of view what these drugs do to the brain and to the heart, and why there's sometimes there's this sudden death in the middle of the night or where, whenever. And we in education probably don't want to admit it, but we probably have possibly have seen this ourselves or among our students and colleagues, but just didn't know what it was. And, of course, there was Doug Smith. I love him. Howard Glasser, Alberto Ferguson came all the way from Columbia, South Carolina.
South America, I always say South Carolina, too. Gerald Porter.
Did you start to say something?
Yes, he came from South America. I always tend to say South Carolina, too, but he came from
South America. Did I say South Carolina?
Yeah, but I do that all the time when I talk about
Columbia, South America.
Columbia is the state capital of South Carolina, I think.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, That's wonderful. Other thing, what did you bring back to your students? You brought back the concepts, more clear concepts about how the psychiatric drugs are toxic?
Yes, that's right. I'm probably not supposed to mention it, but I'm getting close to retirement. I'm getting a little bolder. But I do bring it up because actually at the school that I'm working at now, that we have a lot of pre-med students. And so they're thinking about going into some aspect of the medical field. And then I have students who are studying dance. This is 11th and 12th grade high school. And you got to realize I live in Myrtle Beach area. So the Myrtle Beach area, there's two career centers. One is in the western part of the county. This is a large county. And the eastern part of the county is Myrtle Beach, which is into entertainment. So I have quite a few students who are into some aspect of entertainment. And it's amazing to me how many students are on psychotropics already. They're on sleeping pills. They're on so-called antidepressants. I tell them, I says, no more antidepressant than alcohol. And I explain how that goes. I mean, you can be happy one minute, sad the next, or go or walk on eggshells and hope they don't go to the next. And I explained about, you know, what it does to the brain and the heart, and I've seen some dangerous situations. I mean, we follow the procedures that we have laid out, but it still could have flipped over to something tragic. And fortunately, it wasn't one of my students who had anything tragic, but there has been some tragic situations in every school district, I think, in the whole country. It's just not mentioned. The newspapers don't print out what's really going on. They may not know, or maybe they don't want to print it out. But there's a lot going on that I find out through the grapevine, and sometimes I just don't know. And I'm real concerned about that. So I brought that back, but also to my coworkers, because obviously they're some of the ones who push for a child who's having difficulty to either continue or go back on some kind of psychotropic or go see their doctor. But one lady that I've made friends with has post-traumatic stress disorder from her Afghanistan stint. And so she was, I don't know how she did it, but she came off her medications. And I came back with a book from, and he was not one of our speakers. What was his name? I'm looking for his name. Oh, here it is. His name is Hemant, H-E-M-A-N-T, Thakur.
Yeah, he did actually speak. We missed him
mm-hmm.
on Sunday.
She really loved that book. I said, I haven't had a chance to read it. I'll loan it to you. You know, I don't know if it's good or not, but she just loved it. So I thought I'd tell you about that. And so she was just smiling. And before, when I first met her, she was like, you know, flat affect. In other words, just not much emotion. Just kind of looks sad. Now she smiles and laughs, and it's just kind of nice. So I'm able to help. You're able to help some people, and not able to help others. It's sort of like a save one starfish. I don't know if anybody knows that story, but sometimes that's all you can do. There's a bunch of starfishes on the beach, and you throw a few of them in, and thank goodness that one feels happy about. Another thing that I'm doing, I just love these seminars conferences. Because then I can take these back and use some of it for seminars I do here locally. And I sometimes will invite, it might be a chiropractor, it might be, next time it's I actually have a medical doctor who does not like to start anybody on medications. So I'm getting ready to do a seminar, and I gave out some flyers, and the address has to be changed because the library has to, they're cut back on the library hours, and so they can't have it that hour. But I do these seminars about 4 hours every few times a year, and then I have people call me, and they want to meet with me, discuss with me, and I share their information from you. I've got some overhead projectors that overhead transparencies and so forth that Ginger gave me from you. So it wasn't a transparency, it was an article that I made into a transparency. And so I share that with them, and they're just simply amazed at, you know, yeah, my son, my daughter does this, that, or the other. So I'm just really grateful to have a seminar such as you offer. I do have tremendous amounts of things to say. I'm not quite sure how much I can say today. I will say that as a special ed teacher, I'm also an academic coach, so I can see people, kids who are not just have so-called IEP. A few of my students are considered emotionally disturbed, and it's not necessarily considered a medical diagnosis, which is kind of interesting. The ADHD is considered a medical diagnosis, and you have to have a medical statement. The LD, classification learning disability, is not a medical diagnosis. You just know that for some reason this kid is having trouble with math or reading or writing or some aspect of it. So it's been very kind of interesting to work with people, and the fact is they vary. And let's see, I was trying to think about, I've been coming to your conferences, I guess, about 12 years now, something like that. When was the first one you did? I don't think I came to your first one that you did away from your home.
Oh, when, God. When was that? I'm not even sure I could tell you when it was. It was
probably
sometime
98
back
or 99.
In the 1990s.
Mm-hmm, right.
But, yeah, we've known each other for a long time, and, of course, now the conference is new. We've started a new organization, the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy, Education, and Living. By the way, that theme of empathic therapy is really catching on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if you got a chance to see the training film that I did, and we showed it Saturday night, and it's sold out already. I've never had anything sell out that quickly. People are hungry to learn how to work empathically with other people. It's been very, very encouraging. Dorothy, you're one of the few people who's had the courage and the stamina to work in the system. And you've worked in the system for so long that you're going to be able to retire soon. Tell me about what it's been like working as a special ed teacher. And how, do you think you've affected the system in any way, or are you just saving those starfish? Which, by the way, is one of Ginger's favorite metaphors or stories, the starfish. How do you feel about how much effect you've been able to have?
I think it's been mixed. I've saved some starfishes, or at least helped with your work and Ginger and all these other people that you've attracted. But as far as the system, it's a mix. It's like, you know, I have spoken to the school board a few times and things, so forth and so on. And I remember one school board member saying that, you know, he's read your books and he was glad that I mentioned you on my flyer that I put out for my next seminars. And so it's been a mix. Some people think I'm real famous. It's interesting. How I'm helpful and not helpful. It depends on whether or not they happen to connect with me, say, through one of the local magazines like Natural Awakenings, or, you know, just happen to, if the newspaper prints announcement of my seminar, and sometimes they will do it, the local newspaper, and sometimes they won't. I have more luck with the smaller newspapers as far as getting announcements printed without having to pay. And so that's been very, 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 very interesting, how things will get into the paper and what will not get into the paper. But small papers I have more luck with. And there are some people who seem to understand and have picked up on what I'm saying, and other people kind of avoid me, and I realize that. And maybe I think I have the hardest time with some parents who have their children on medication who are also medically trained. I think that they're the hardest one for me to deal with. as far as, you know, having them, you know, sitting down and having a conversation. But nevertheless, there are a few people out there, and I think if more of us stick our necks out, other people will be willing to stick their necks out. I think we're all like that. We kind of like look around and see, okay, is anybody going to stick their necks out with mine?
I think so that's been a lot of my function in life has been the one to stick his neck out.
I'm sorry?
I think a lot of my function in life has been the one to stick his neck out.
That's right. And then with the rest of us, just stick our necks out after yours. But that's basically the way I see it. I will say this about a lot of the children that I'm seeing, because I have, as a special ed teacher, I get to see a little bit about their backgrounds. And so I will say in general that a lot of children who have severe allergies, I mean, this allergy stuff is just going through the roof, wind up being labeled ADHD on top of that. And a lot of people are not aware that the allergy medication can affect attention and also can affect their activity levels. I mean, everybody varies a little bit. So that's another aspect maybe you could pay more attention to, is the allergies and the allergy medications that they're on. And there are actually natural treatments for allergies. I won't go into them online. I will talk to anybody who wants to call me or something like that. That's not terribly expensive or even painful. So, and they can be effective. There's more than one kind, and everybody's got their own little techniques, just like with psychotherapy. But anyway, I thought I mentioned that a lot of times it's misdiagnosed. Now, this Asperger's syndrome has me worried. There probably is such a thing as Asperger's syndrome. I'm not going to argue about that. But the fact that that we sometimes wonder makes me wonder. I will say this, because as a special ed teacher, sometimes I would have kids several years in a row, and I might have them in elementary school, and if they switch me to high school, I have them there. So, I might have them again when I taught at the jail for a couple of years. But one of the things I find is that usually when you look at their records, they will start off on one of the ADHD drugs, and then, of course, as you know, that they'll have a reaction to that. And it affects their behavior, and before you know it, they're bipolar, or they're depressed, and then they're put on antidepressants, and then they're definitely bipolar, and so forth and so on. It just never stops. So I think most of your listeners might be aware of that, but that the medications can create other types of mental states. So I see that whenever I look at their background, and I see this progression, it's just amazing to me. And I'm just really upset about it. I have a long history, you might say, not with myself using, except for 1 week, psychotropic drugs, but from childhood. And but it took me a long time to connect the dots. And when I was a child, my stepmother, who I think loved me as best she could, would look at me the next day, and she would say, the next day after a night, and she would say, "Where'd you get the scratches on your neck?" And I said, "You put them there." Well, she had all kinds of medicine beside her bed. I found out later she was seeing a psychiatrist, so I don't know what her medicines were. And then also, when I was 12, she got extra mean and violent, and We went ahead and had our dog put to sleep because she was just so mean to it. And she told me not too long after that, she said, "Oh, the doctor told her that the medicine that he had given her for her hot flashes can make you mean." That was the first time I became somewhat aware. It just stuck in me. I wasn't totally aware. I said, "Huh? What do you mean by that?" So anyway, it was a long, long story. And then, of course, when my son was in school, he was very hyper, and it was suggested, of course, not many people back then when I first started teaching. I've been teaching 36 years now. Recommended medications or anything like that, but still, my son was so hyper, they wanted him medicated, and I refused to do so. And so he's now a senior engineer with a top company. So he's doing fine. I mean, he's a nice guy, thank goodness. That's more important than anything, whether he's an engineer or whether you know, he has to work at a lower level job, but still he's turned out just fine.
Well, you know, Dorothy, you mentioned Asperger's disorder, and you know, I'll just say bluntly, it does not exist as a real entity. It's
just an attempt
to expand the psychiatric syndromes to more and more children so that more and more drugs can be given to them. Sure, there are plenty of quirky kids who have difficulty relating to other children and to adults, but what they clearly need is just a lot more help, maybe more help than some other kids, or maybe their parents just haven't been around enough when they were young. I mean, the causes can be many things, but the diagnosis misleads people into thinking there's something in particular wrong with the child, rather than the child just needs more encouragement in socializing, more help in socializing. The first thing I do when I see a child labeled Asperger's is to tell him there's absolutely nothing wrong with him. But when he stops the quirky behavior, people will stop looking at him like he's got quirky behavior. And I find kids will, if that's said to them lovingly and with serious meaning to it, kids will start to get their behavior under control within the first session. And then their parents learn to treat them like normal and to expect normal socialization from them. And usually the parents leave the first session knowing they just got to do more parenting. Dad's got to take more time with his son or daughter. Mom's got to take more time with her kids. And I think you'll agree with me that it all keeps coming back to relationship, to the power of empathic relationship. You with me on that, Dar? Retire? What are you going to do? You're going to end up working harder than ever, probably.
I'm just going to get retreaded. That retired means re and then tired. Retreaded. So I probably will do more work on this. I probably need to get a little bit more political. I just don't have time to do it. And go see my congressmen and representatives, although I know that can be a lost cause at often. Still, they need to hear it, even if they're, you know, even if they're funded by particular industry, which is a problem. I see that as a real problem. See, I was on the board of directors of Mental Health America. Is that all right if I mention them?
Sure. Who are they?
Well, Mental Health America used to be Mental Health Association. It's kind of like NAMI.
Well, they're very heavily funded by the drug companies.
Well, so is Mental Health America.
Yeah.
And so I was on their board of directors hoping that I could get some help for a roommate of mine who every time she went to the hospital, she came back worse than before. And I really liked this lady, and she has now passed away, but she actually became saner after she got off her meds, but she had to leave this area because there was a psychiatrist nearby who kept saying, no, you got to take your meds. But, anyway, she was an interesting case, and she got to the point with akathisia. Is that how you pronounce it? Tardive akathisia?
Akathisia.
Yeah, akathisia. Yeah. Right. She got so that she couldn't sit down long enough to use the restroom.
Let me spell it for folks.
She had to use it while she walked.
A-K-A-T-H-I-S-I-A. Akathisia.
You have it in your books. I never pronounce it right.
Yeah. Well, describe it, or do you want me to?
Okay, well, she couldn't sit down long enough to do anything. I mean, some people, it's my understanding from your books, feel this internally. But she was feeling it internally, and she couldn't sit down long enough to even go to the restroom. So I would be getting have to work the next day and get a call. She'd be several miles away from the house, and I'd have to go pick her up. And I tried to pick her up, put her in the car, and she'd jump in the car and then jump right back out and jump in the car and run back out. She couldn't sit down long enough to use the restroom. It was really cruel. I'll never forget the look on her face. And when I visited her in the hospital, I said every time she went to the hospital, she got worse. And so that was one of the eggs that you might what egg me on, plus some things that were happening to a few of my students.
Dorothy, let me take a minute and explain to people a little bit more about akathisia.
Okay.
Akathisia is caused by all of the antipsychotic drugs, the old ones like Haldol and Thorazine, and also by the new ones like Zyprexin, Risperdal, and Geodone. It is also caused by the so-called SSRI antidepressants like Prozac and Paxil and Zoloft and Celexa and so on. And akathisia is like being tortured from the inside out. and it drives people crazy. People have been known to get so despairing from this horrible experience that they kill themselves, they get violent, they get aggressive, they get suicidal. And it is such a well-known and well-documented phenomena that it is actually in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. You just look up in the DSM, you look up akathisia, starts out talking about the antipsychotic drugs and then says all of these findings occur also with the SSRIs. They literally drive people crazy. And almost never does the physician who prescribed the drug admit what's going on. Instead, the behavior is so weird, like the person you're describing, that they end up getting more and more drugs. I've even known people end up on electroshock treatment because nobody wanted to face that the drugs were driving them out of their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Dorothy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen that. My own father had electric shock treatment 3 times, and so afterwards there were things he couldn't do anymore. And so I have a lot of background. It took me a long time to realize what was going on. But certainly once I had to make a decision about my own child, and what made me make the decision about my own child was putting what I consider 2 and 2 together. I know a little bit more today, at least I think I do. And back in the 1970s, this was later 1970s. And so they were talking about in the paper about schizophrenia and it being related to your genes. Well, now today we know there's nothing in the genes, or at least we haven't found anything in the genes to confirm schizophrenia is inherited. But nevertheless, I had lots of relatives on my daddy's side, and no wonder with what they went through, who had those kind of symptoms anyway. And my daddy was told that he was 10% psychotic, whatever that meant. So he had electric shock treatment 3 times in Morganton, North Carolina, at the hospital, Broughton Hospital. I think you visited there once, didn't you? Or you certainly visited North Carolina once.
Yes, I've been to some of the North Carolina state mental hospitals when I was with the United States Public Health Service.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the effect that the shock treatment had on your father. It's just so important to keep reminding people
about this.
Yeah,
he had 3 of them, and so he had been considered, now I will tell you this, he was in World War II. During World War II, he was in active combat for 33 months. So whatever that was and whatever else was going on in the family, all I can say is that he had no patience. He just didn't stop to think anymore. It was like there was, and he told me, he said he was given electric shock treatments to help him forget. So I think it worked. He forgot, and if a sheet didn't come off the bed, he didn't look to see what was going on the other side. He just kept yanking till he tore the sheet. So it was that kind of thing. That was what I saw with my dad. And
so he was really injured.
Yes, and so whenever my son was coming along and they wanted me to put him on Ritalin, well, anyway, they were talking about, in this paper, I think it was People's Magazine. I don't know. It was People's. What was it? It goes in the newspaper every Sunday. And it says, well, it's related to the genes, but not everybody who has the genes will come down with this condition. At least that's what they were saying at that time. And it seems to be, some kind of traumatic event when they're in their early 20s or late teens and or illegal drugs. And then it said some prescription drugs. And I remember back then they tell you now people are not bothered by it today. Back then they said that Ritalin was amphetamine like.
Yeah.
Essentially amphetamine.
Dorothy, we're
going
to take a break in a minute.
I mean, you say,
tell people how they
amphetamine.
Can get in touch with you.
Uh huh. So I said, I'm not giving this to my kid after what I'd seen happen to my daddy and some of his relatives on his side, a couple of his brothers and a couple of his sisters. So anyway, that was why I decided not to give my son any medication.
Dorothy. Dorothy, we're going to take a break in a minute. Briefly tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. Tell them to look up
when we come back. When we come back.
Okay.
Let's go to break.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for all things progressive.
Hi, I'm Allison Rosalie D. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades of studying, talking about, exchanging, and reporting on integrative well-being and collective psychology, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
The shaky economy, peak oil, and now an unstable climate. Get the inside story with Alex Smith on Radio EcoShock. Top scientists find a looming catastrophe while activists try for change. Experts, authors, and alternative media from around the world and around the corner. Hear it all. Radio EcoShock every Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Listen free and live free right here on PRN, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune in to Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
Gary Nall. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
To the Progressive Radio Network each day for the best progressive minds in the world.
Hi, Dorothy. We are back on the air.
Thank you.
I'm Darcy Cassidy.
Oh, you wanted to know how they could get a hold of me. I want to make a couple announcements. One thing, you could try Dorothy Cassidy, Myrtle Beach area, and get my phone number. They can get it that way if you don't want to have to. And Dorothy is, I've never been to Kansas. That's how you can remember that, D-O-R-O-T-H-Y. Cassidy, when I walked on crutches and braces, that used to be called Hopalong Cassidy, C-A-S-S. I, as in Sam, I, D as in Dorothy, Y. My phone number is 843-272-3432. That's again, that's 843-272-3432. And so you, if you don't have that down, you, maybe you can remember Dorothy Cassidy and look me up, you know, Google me or whatever. Another thing is that I'm going to do a seminar on May 7th, and it's going to be locally, so just call me to get directions, and that's going to be with Corinne Merle, who is a medical doctor, and so the first hour of my seminar, I talk about the negative stuff, you know, how bad it is and the problems with diagnosis and treatments, and I use a lot of Peter Bregan stuff, including a little video clip that's very powerful. And then The next 3 hours, and that includes a little break, is the choices, the positive choices that you can make. Well, she is an expert in homeopathic treatments, and she likes that. Now, she believes in these other things. She does believe in psychotherapy and so forth and so on, so she's not just homeopathic, but that's basically what she does. She does. That's her part. So she's going to present for about an hour, and then I do 2 hours of parenting, and sometimes we switch gears if somebody has a special problem. It depends on who's there. I do monitor and adjust. In other words, depends on who shows up. I never know for sure. And it's been very interesting. I call it potluck sometimes, but most of the time that's what happens. I have 2 hours of parenting, and then I have the other, 1 hour where we're looking at some of the other alternative treatments, and then the first hour is, you know, all the problems with diagnosis and treatments that's being given now. So I try not to have all of it negative. So it's 3/4 of it's good. Good stuff. And
Dorothy,
good organic food, too.
Dorothy, talk about what you feel are the most important principles of empathic therapy and empathic parenting. Sort of give folks an idea of what they need to be looking at when they're trying to help their children or their colleagues or their clients.
Well, certainly, you know, you've written a few good books, and I've used, let's see, who was that other person there? Howard Glasser. Being positive, and then there is a book, Take a Stand, Be a Parent, and that was by Valentine. I'm trying to think of his first
name.
Michael Valentine, right. And so, and I use some of David Stein. I actually blend a number of people's works in there, and I say, you know, I don't have the answer to your child, but you need to be real consistent. You don't have to yell, scream and yell, although I did a lot of that when I was parenting. I'll be honest with you. I was not the perfect parent. Somehow or another, he got all right. He grew up to be just fine, either because of me or in spite of me or a little bit of both. But that's my view of that, is that we don't always have to go around screaming and yelling and throwing our kids out, but especially don't throw them out the house. It just does not do it. You're not going to get anywhere by throwing them out of the house, because I've taught at the jail, so I see what happens, can happen to people. So I recommend those particular approaches. And it's not with yelling, it's not with screaming. With little children, you're not rewarding all the time. You're not thinking for them all the time. You're helping them think for themselves. With older children, though, you may have to do a little bit more. You might have to do a little bit more, but it's been interesting, and most parents do like Michael Valentine's video, but I've had a few. You never know what you're going to get, but I've had a few didn't like it, but most of them have. They really have enjoyed it, and they kind of chuckle at a few things. Those are the kinds of things that I present, and the main thing I present is don't give them toxic stuff. And just don't do it. Just don't go that route. And this is going nowhere fast, is what I call it.
Dorothy, most people who take a stand the way you do get into a lot of trouble. And I think a lot of people would be interested in knowing how you've managed to keep yourself working in this arena, keep yourself from getting fired or into worse trouble.
Well, I've come a little bit close. Most teachers do not want to raise anybody's eyebrows, because what happens is you may have had a wonderful, there's a couple of things, some things you would agree with, some things you wouldn't, but are afraid to have anybody see what they're doing in the classroom. And you may have just wonderful, recommendations and so forth and so on, and then all of a sudden when you disagree with something that they're doing, especially with medication, then all of a sudden the magnifying glass comes in, and you're actually doing something really good. The kids are making more progress than ever before, but all of a sudden you can do no right. So that can happen. couple of things I have done over the years. From time to time, not very often, I do my little five-minute spiel to the school board so they know who I am. They know that I'm a fighter. I belong to the Horry County Education Association, which is a part of South Carolina Education Association, which a lot of people don't like this one, which is part of the National Education Association, obviously. But I would not be a teacher if it weren't for that particular education association. They have come to bat for me. And that's how I've managed to survive, I believe, with their help. It's actually people in behind the scenes, too. I shouldn't say it's just the education association, but people behind the scenes, they kind of like you in a way, and they don't let things go too far. They're working behind the scenes, and you don't know for sure who they are, but you kind of suspect so. So that's what happens, making sure people know who I am. I'm visible. I don't try to hide what I'm doing. And that, whenever you're trying to hide, then that's when they can get you. So I'm very visible.
Now, Dorothy, when you're working in the school, do you get to work with some of the kids longer term? And if so, can you get to involve their parents?
As much as I can. Some I can, very much so, when we have a wonderful relationship, and others can't get anywhere near. So it just depends on the parents and whether or not they're one of these people who like people. They actually have to like people and not just be focused on just their children. So then they like you because they realize that you like their child and you like children, and they like you for the same reason you like certain individuals, you and Ginger. So they're human beings. And then there are others who seem to be caught up in the labeling and in the medication. It bothers me a bit. I'm a teacher, and I believe in academically, but it's not the end all. It's not the. I would rather have my child have a childhood than to be have straight A's and B's in school. If I had to choose, most of the children that I'm seeing at the present, you know, they really could make mostly A's and B's. They really could if they really wanted to. And there's a little bit of a push from me, but I would never push them to the point of putting them on medication to get them to do it.
Have you been attacked by the psychiatric community at all, or perhaps you don't want to talk about that?
Oh, no, I don't mind it. Only once. I've had a psychiatrist to attend that was very supportive and friendly, and then I've had one that wasn't, and he showed his little whatever. He was very unfriendly. In fact, that was the only seminar where I had a psychiatrist that was not friendly or had anybody that was not very exactly friendly. There might have been a couple of people who were disgusted with me. I don't know. But they didn't show it. He did. And he didn't make himself look too good in front of the rest of the attendees to this particular seminar. But they have not directly attacked me. They have seen me at the mental health center here. You know, I was on Mental Health America Board of Directors for quite a few years. I may have slowed them down a little bit, because even though that's an organization that actually supports the psychiatric community, I was also on the board, so I think that may have slowed them down. So actually, they haven't yet. That's all I know. I don't know why I haven't been attacked yet, and it might come later. I have no idea what's going on. All I know is, I will say this, I used to do, when I first started out, I did a seminar to the CEC, that's the Council for Exceptional Children. I eventually quit that organization, and I may eventually join up just to see if I can't get another perspective, but it seems to me like they have really gone into...
Darcy, you're fading in and out.
I am. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. The reason why I'm talking, I wasn't sure, because this phone somehow or another doesn't, I don't hear you too well. Mental Health America, let's see, what was my, Council for Exceptional Children, and I gave a couple of presentations to them, the state, at their state conferences. But I was able to do that only because the person who was on the committee deciding who would be able to present had also done some research on so-called ADHD and managed to get some kids off. She had a PhD and managed to get some kids off of Ritalin, and so she approved me. But she became disabled and couldn't do it anymore, so I haven't been able to get on their agenda anymore. So I eventually just quit that particular organization. Then another one is the South Carolina Education Association. They're not already doing much as far as statewide conferences and so forth, but I think I could probably get on if they did it again. So I've noticed that the CEC was not particularly interested in my presentations anymore. Once that particular professor was no longer on a particular committee to approve me. So those are some of the things that I've noticed over the years. But I continue to do them at libraries. This next time I'm going to do it at a community center where I'll have to pay something. The libraries have been very supportive because some of the people who work in the libraries have children and grandchildren whom they're concerned about. And that helps me to get in there and be able to have a spot to do our presentation. And also, like I say, the small newspapers, such as Natural Awakenings and the Ori Independent and North Myrtle Beach Times and so forth, I'm able to get something in there from time to time.
You're an inspiration, Dorothy, for people who work inside the system and outside the system at the same time. You have an incredibly independent spirit. And you've really been able to affect your community and your schools. I think that's very, very apparent. And I hope we'll get some listeners to this show and to the archives to really hear what an individual can do. Often people will say to me, what can I do? Well, just use your imagination in your local community and get started and use the various materials that you're going to get at the conferences or from reading my books or Michael Valentine's books or any of the great people you've mentioned today. So there's so much to do out there, and I hope you and I can figure out what more you can do. Maybe with your retirement you could take a more active role in the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy.
That
would be really great.
I think we're going to have to go more because this is so much Save One Starfish. We certainly need to do something more politically. And we need to get these big papers to be willing to not hedge the truth too much. And I think
that's a tall task, Dorothy.
I know. The only thing I can say is maybe we can chop down a tree here and there. So that's what I would like to see happening.
Dorothy, we have about 10 minutes left. What kinds of things would you like to communicate to the audience?
I would like to communicate to the audience that, first of all, I would love to see y'all on May 7th. That's a Saturday from 9:30 to 1:30. And you have how to reach my phone number to get directions to where it's going to be. I've got to retype my flyer on that because the address had to change at the last minute. They're doing so much cutting back on money that the library couldn't be open on Saturday, so I had to find another spot. Another thing is to do speak to your school board. You've got these, most school boards have these little 5-minute public comments. They can be very powerful little times to communicate. Talk to as much as you can. Try to get an appointment to see the superintendent of schools. And you'll usually find one or two people at least on the board who's sympathetic with your position. I think there's some more I need to do with school nurses. I don't think they're adequately trained to recognize adverse drug reactions and potential great harm and even death that can come. I've seen some combinations where I thought a child could very easily die, and they didn't get to the emergency room because that's not what the parent wanted. But I think that child was very close, very, very close. I've seen that happen more than once. And Also, just don't ever start your child on these psychotropic drugs. Try to develop a relationship with your child. As they become teenagers, that can be a little difficult, but, you know, keep at it. And there's a lot of people who have some good ideas, such as Michael Valentine and David Stein. Some things you may agree with them, and some ways you may not. There's Howard Glasser. There's William Glasser, even. There's a whole... And Peter Bragan, he has a book on developing a relationship. I'm trying to remember the name of it. What was the name of that book?
The Heart of Being Helpful. The Heart of Being Helpful.
There was one on children, though. I'm trying to think of the name.
I'm blocking on the name of my own book. It's, oh, God.
Well, just look on his website at all his books. Okay,
I'll turn around here at my chair while you're talking.
Okay, there you go. And so those are the things I would do. Just, you're going to have to be careful of when you go see doctors. If you have a child with a chronic situation, whether it's emotional, physical, or whatever, you're going to have to learn a lot of stuff from various people on your own. You cannot anymore rely just on what the doctor recommends. It's just
that's incredibly important. And the internet gives us so much in that regard.
That's right.
The books, Dorothy, that I've written that deal most with kids are Reclaiming Our Children.
That's maybe
what you were thinking about.
That's right. Beautiful. There's a couple of beautiful quotes in there. I wish I had.
I also talk about in both Talking Back to Ritalin and the Ritalin Fact Book, the last chapters are about how to help your kids, how to retake moral authority with your kids, how to help them learn to listen to you through relationship, through a caring relationship. And my training film can be very helpful just in general with empathic therapy. Michael Valentine's books are very good, and...
He has a good, interesting video. Unfortunately, it's not. The last time I looked, it wasn't on DVD. It's a video. It's really interesting. It kind of gives you a synopsis of it, and it's called "Take a Stand, Be a Parent."
Well, I'll have to get in touch with Michael and tell him to get it on DVD. Got to keep up in this world. Fortunately, I have Ginger, who keeps me up on everything in the world. Including how to use Skype and to do my radio show. And, you know, she just was totally in charge of managing and running our conference. I don't know if you know, Dorothy, we're going to have another conference in April of next year, again in Syracuse, New York. We nearly filled this year, so people will need to sign up in advance because I think we probably will fill. We were so close to it. And again, you can learn all about empathic therapy and the principles and the conference on empathictherapy.org. We got about 5 or 6 minutes, Dorothy. I think it's wonderful what you've done in the world and what you've done just on your own using materials that you've gathered.
Yeah,
you really are an inspiration.
Uh-huh.
What would you say to other special ed teachers and school counselors and school psychologists who are just afraid to stick their necks out?
The only thing I can say is if you find it too fearful, just go to Emotional Freedom Techniques, EFTUniverse.com or one of those, and there's some tapping routines to do when you get too nervous about something, and figure out why is it that you're afraid. And try to bring that fear down to a manageable level. Little fear is good for us. A little bit of fear is good for you. Just whenever it keeps you from moving, that's when it's not as good. Let's see here. And also, always check your child to make sure there's nothing physically wrong. But you may have to go to someone else. And I use alternative medicine. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that it's perfect. I haven't had a prescription drug probably over 20 years, and the only reason why I say that is not because you shouldn't or somebody else shouldn't, is that I've been amazed at how, not being perfectly healthy, how I can find other solutions. And I'm just amazed that there are other solutions to situations. And then I check and see what kind of solutions they have for my situations. And I'm saying, I don't think I want that solution. So
who do you go to, Dorothy? You go to naturopaths?
Have something else that creates other problems. And a lot of medications do create other psychological problems, like your allergy drugs. And I'm trying to think of some. I have known students to take those depot shots for birth control, and that really messed up their emotions. And then they got, then from there, they went on to heavy duty psychotropic medications. It's just, you really need to research your stuff first, really well. And I wish I had like the perfect solution for people. I don't have the perfect solution for myself, except as time goes on, you find some answers that you would never expect to find. I wish it was all together and it wasn't just about making money, or I don't have anything against making money, but it wasn't just about making money no matter what. There has to be some morals there, has to be some principles in how we make our money and how we choose to make our living.
I think principled living is the key to life. Principled living and love are the keys to life. Good, solid values and a willingness to love.
That's right. We must be willing to love. Love is sacrifice. And another thing I think about, a lot of people are very negative about suffering, and I don't like suffering, but I will tell you this, that if it weren't for suffering has been very good for me, even though I don't like it. And if it weren't for suffering, I would just skim on the surface of life, never dive deep down within myself to find other solutions and to find something that's more meaningful. So all of us, I think suffering is a way of learning how to love. And it's not something to be sought after, but it's not something to think of as evil, necessarily.
Well, in line with that, Dorothy, and I try to help people to welcome their painful feelings,
mm-hmm.
to understand them, to learn from them, and not to obliterate them with drugs. And in a safe counseling relationship or a safe family or friendship, people can welcome those painful feelings and be kept company with them and find their way through the painful feelings. And that's where empathy comes in. When
mm-hmm.
someone's truly open to us, then we can have our painful feelings and understand them and see where they're leading us. But I totally agree with you. And it's, you know, when I have patients who have suffered enormously, I tell them that they are going to live fully as they learn from their suffering. Dorothy,
mm-hmm.
we're getting to the conclusion now. I want to thank you so much. This is Dorothy Cassidy. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Peter. I really appreciate it. God bless.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bragan and his lifelong reform work on www.bragan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.